Hi everyone.
We're going to start the next talk. I'd like to introduce you to Mayang, Jackie, and Shirley. I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher the name. But yeah, they're going to talk about Apache Pinot. And yeah, over to you guys. Enjoy, have fun.
Hi everyone, my name is Mayank and I'm here with Jackie and Sangyeon, and we're here to present Apache Pinot, which powers all of real-time analytics within LinkedIn. So what is the most important thing for analytics? It's data. So let's spend a minute and figure out how data is being generated at LinkedIn and how it is being used. So the LinkedIn activity is very, very straightforward. Basically, you have actors or members which are performing actions like click, like, share, viewing profiles, etc., on entities which are other members' profiles, job postings, company pages, etc. And we have about 600 million users who are doing tens of millions of such activities, and we end up with trillions of events per day. So now that we have data, how do we use it? Well, we can use it by creating value for our members. How do we do that? Well, we create products. These products can then generate data in turn, and we can analyze that data to generate insights to improve the products that we already built and also to be building new products. So if you've used LinkedIn, I'm sure you have come across one of these applications. The most popular one is Who Viewed My Profile. Basically, here what we're trying to do is, as a member, I get analytics on how my viewers are viewing me, how the views vary over time. I can slice and dice my viewers by different dimensions like their skills, the current company, industry, and so on and so forth. Another interesting one is employee distribution for a particular company. So for example, let's say you had a job offer that we were exploring and you wanted to figure out what is the ratio of engineers to the overall employee strength in the company. And these kind of insights can be answered by this particular application. But the one that I really like is the one that does the global talent pool insights. This is a very interesting application which is kind of telling, you know, giving you insights on how the talent pool is distributed all over the world. Who are their employers and, you know, what kind of talent is moving from company A to company B and many such things. One use case for this one would be, you know, let's say you have a company that is interested in a particular kind of talent, let's say data scientists over 5 years of experience. And at the same time, they also were interested in finding a location for their next office. They can use this particular tool and figure out, oh, this talent pool is actually located or concentrated in this part of the world, and maybe it makes more sense for me to open up a location here. So as you can see, all these are very interesting applications, and these are all powered by Pinot. So let's talk about what does it take to build such an application. We'll talk with a very simple example of the Who Viewed My Profile that I just mentioned. What are the challenges here? Well, we live in a world of instant gratification. What does that mean? It means if somebody is viewing my profile right now, then I want to be able to know about it right now. I want the analytics to actually reflect that. Also, this is a site-facing application, which means there are millions of users that are active at any given point in time, which also means that it's going to reflect into, you know, thousands of queries per second into this application. Also, since this is site-facing, we want the latency to be super low, maybe, you know, low tens of milliseconds and so. And to provide better value for our members, we always want to be this application to be highly available and always on. So these are some of the very strict constraints that are, you know, required to build this application. So now let's consider some approaches on how we can solve this problem. One naive approach is, you know, when there is a profile view, there is an event that gets generated that lands up in a profile view table. And then on the application side, the server just, you know, reads the table, does its magic, and renders the analytics. But the problem here is that we want the analytics to be rich, which means there is a, you know, slicing and dicing happening on different dimensions. And those dimensions, a lot of them actually are constant for a member. For example, the member's name, the country, the industry, and so on and so forth. So in that case, what you do is you take out all those dimension attributes of the employee and you put it in a separate table. By doing that, what you've done is you've made the event stream very lean. However, now you're imposing a challenge on the application that it now needs to join across two tables for a given member ID. It has to go to the profile view table to get the counts, and then it has to look up that member to get its attributes to be able to slice and dice. So this approach can definitely work well if your data size is not that large and you're not really so strict about your latencies. And it does provide a real-time experience as long as the storage systems that back it up support that. But the issue with this approach is that we have this join that is happening in the read path, right? And that increases the latency. So if we wanted to improve this, what can we do? So takes us to the approach two. What we can do is we can take out the join from the critical path and put it somewhere else. So what would be a logical place for that? Well, the streaming, it could be the ingestion time, right? So as data is being ingested, you could use a streaming engine to do a join on the fly and put it into the separate member profile view table. So the profile view table in this case now has all that is needed by the application to render the analytics. So in this case, we are still real time. I say near real time because if you're using a stream processing engine, you do have the capability or option of pre-aggregating for smaller windows of time, say 15 minutes or so. And you can sacrifice the real timeness of your application to gain for that pre-aggregation or vice versa. So that's one thing. And also, we have eliminated the join from the critical path, which improves the latency quite a bit. But the latency in this case also is still a function of the amount of work that needs to be done, specifically the amount of rows that need to be scanned to answer that query. So how can we improve on that? Well, one option is if you could somehow, if your application was very simple and then you had queries that were limited in nature, then you could just pre-compute the answers for those, also known as pre-cubing. And how do you do that? Well, you cannot use in this particular case, it is more suggested to use a batch processing engine, which kind of goes over a higher window of time, such as maybe the entire day or hourly, where you will keep pre-computing the answers for your query and just putting it available for the application server to just use it. So the advantage here is that now that you no longer have a join, also you don't have to scan the rows. A query comes in, the answer is just there in one row, right? So the latency is not only very fast, but it's also constant time for the most part. But what you have given up on is moving away from the real-timeness of this, right? I mean, you are either hourly or daily, so you're no longer real-time anymore. The other issue with this approach is since you're pre-computing everything, it works okay as long as you only have like one or two simple queries. But if you wanted to do richer analytics and your query patterns increase, for example, you want to slice and dice based on a set of combination A, dimensions A, B, and C versus B, C, and D, these are separate cubes that you will have to pre-compute and pre-store, which means there's a storage explosion, right? Also, another issue is once you already have the system up and running, and if you wanted to add another dimension to your data to provide more analytics on it, the only way to be able to do that is to pre-compute all the cubes again, and then bootstrap your data. So let us pull it all together. I mean, we talked about these three approaches, which kind of build a spectrum from left to right. And what we're seeing here is on the left-hand side, you have your raw fact tables, which are events that are getting generated as members are performing actions on your website. And you can use systems like Spark SQL, Presto, Hive, BigQuery, etc., to build some analytics application on top of it. The sweet spot for this one is that, you know, cases where you don't really care about latency, maybe it's not really even a dashboard, it is more of a report generation use case where latency is not really required. But if you are a little bit more strict on the latency requirements, you can actually pre-join and pre-aggregate these raw data. And in this space, you can use solutions like Druid, Elastic, and Pino. And if you're really, really sensitive to latency, then you can pre-cube your solutions, answers, and you can use systems like Kylene or a key value store. And I also mentioned Pino here because Pino does allow you to do partial pre-queuing. And Jackie will cover that in his talk. So in essence, when you're moving from left to right in this spectrum, what you're gaining on is the latency, but at the cost of flexibility. Putting it all together, this is how who viewed my profile is built at LinkedIn. For messaging, for streaming, we use Kafka, which which streams the data from as events are happening on the website. For stream processing, we use SAMSA, which joins the table for the member table, which sits in Espresso, and the data then gets fed into Pino via Kafka again. Both the raw data as well as the joined data gets ETL'd into Hadoop and is available for analytics again. And Pino can actually ingest data from offline as well as real time because it makes use of the Lambda architecture. And on the right hand side, you can see you can build a variety of applications using this, right from web site facing WVMP who viewed my profile use cases, or if you wanted to have some dashboards just to monitor your own key business metrics, and also use Presto like system to perform more ad hoc queries. So I talked about a lot about the applications that Pino is powering, but what is Pino? So Pino is a OLAP data store which has its own query execution engine. It's a columnar store, and it provides a variety of indexing strategies to cater to the different use cases that it supports, right from site facing to all the way to dashboards and manual queries. It does support a lot of low latency analytics use cases. It's a distributed system which is highly scalable, reliable, and available. I already mentioned about the Lambda architecture, and we're here, so we're open source. So to summarize a little bit more, within LinkedIn, Pino is powering about 70-odd member-facing use cases. And since I mentioned early on in my talk, there's trillions of records or events being generated, those get translated into thousands of business metrics that are used internally to generate insights and to improve upon our products. These are being served at more than 100K queries per second, and Pino is ingesting data at more than a million records per second for these. If we wanted to kind of categorize the kind of use cases that Pino supports in a kind of a spectrum, and on one hand, I've already talked about the site-facing use cases, which the challenges there are that it's site-facing, so there is the QPS or the queries per second is very high. You're very tight on the latency requirements, but at the same time, to serve these, the data is kind of curated to the extent that it enables these features to be able to support these kind of latencies. And then we also have the internal dashboard that Pino powers. These are the dashboards. So since, as I mentioned, the data is already sitting on HDFS, all the tracking data, and we're using it to generate business metrics. All of that is powered by Pino. The challenge here is that the data size is huge. It is highly dimensional data. The query patterns here is also very complex, and they are kind of exploratory in nature. And then there's about 2,000 metrics that we're supporting here. But one of the very interesting use cases is anomaly detection. Basically, you know, think about all these 2,000 dashboards, you know, which people are monitoring and using. It does not make a lot of sense, or it becomes really inefficient for users to, you know, log on to their dashboards and say, hey, is my metric doing well today? What about now? And, you know, hey, is there an issue? And if so, what's the issue? So to solve this problem, we have a tool called ThirdEye, which is an anomaly detection engine, which is part of Pinot open source as well. What it does is here is it uses Pinot as the storage engine, and it itself is a stateless algorithm, which is running anomaly detection engines on these dashboards and flagging any issues and also assisting with the root cause analysis and other things needed. So outside of LinkedIn, Pinot is also being used in production at Uber, Slack, more recently on Factual, Microsoft, and Weibo. And we are hoping to extend that. With this, I call upon Sing-Yun for the next talk.
So hello, everyone. My name is Sing-Yun, and I'm a committer of Pinot, and I also work at LinkedIn. So thanks for Mayang on introducing what the Pinot is and how it's used at LinkedIn. So for this section, we're going to cover how to use Pinot along with some of the Pinot architectures. So for any storage systems like Pinot, they provide two different functionalities. So they provide a way to ingest some data into the system, and they also provide a way to extract the data out of the system. So for this, Pinot supports both batch and real-time data ingestion, and it also provides the SQL-like query interface called PQL, and which is the subset of the SQL for extracting data out of the Pinot. So keep this in mind, and let's try to build something cool. So let's say that we have some event RSVP data, and you can think of this data is from the meetup.com like website where the users are posting events and other users are looking at the events and RSVP to those events. So if we have this data available, what we would like to do next is to analyze and extract some insights out of the data. So we probably interested in what are the top popular events or what are the popular cities who's using this website. So if you use Pinot, we can actually achieve this very easily. All you need to do is ingest some data into Pinot and then connect some UI tools for the visualization. So let's go over steps on how to build this end-to-end pipeline from the raw data all the way to the visualizations of the data. So in order to use Pinot, you have to go over two different steps. The first step is to do one-time setup to define the schema and define table config, and we need to create the tables. And then second part is to set up the data ingestion pipeline. So for batch pipeline, you need to set up the scheduled job to generate the Pinot and push data periodically. And for the real-time ingestion data pipeline, you need to do the one-time setup to configure the stream data source so that the Pinot knows which stream data source it needs to consume from. Let's start with defining the schema. So Pinot has three different types of field specs. The first is the dimension, which is an attribute of your data. So we usually use the dimension columns for filter or group by class. And then we also have the metric columns, which is the number that is used to measure characteristics of a dimension. And we usually use the metric column for the aggregation functions. And we also have the special time column, which is a timestamp of an event. And then we treat this as a special column because we use it for multiple different components. Basically, all the data in Pinot is partitioned based on the time. And also, it is used for the retention management. So for our example, let's try to define the schema. So we can name this schema as the meetup RSVP. And then we can add some event-related fields to the dimension field specs. So we can add event name, event time, country, and city to the dimension columns. And then we can also add the RSVP count to the metric fields. And then we can add the timestamp for the time field spec. So time column has, you also have to configure the time type, which currently supports epoch and date time. And if you use the epoch based timestamp, then you also need to specify the time granularity, whether it's in milliseconds or second, hour or day. So with this example of the schema, if you want to find the top 10 events in the US, then you have to run the queries shown in the screen. So please note that we are running aggregation sum function over RSPP count, which is the metric column. And then we are filtering on country, and then we are doing the group by on the event name, which are the dimension columns. So now that we have the schema, next step is to define the table config. So we can configure the table name as meetup RSPP, the same as the schema name. Actually, Pinot enforces schema name and table name to be the same. And then we can configure the table type. It can be batch, real-time, and hybrid. And we can also set the replication factors and indexing columns. So Pinot supports multiple different indexing technologies to expedite the query processing time. And we currently have the inverted index, sorted index, and star tree index. And those will be covered in detail in the later section by Jackie. And we also have the Bloom filters, and we can also set the retention time for the table. So if we have this Pinot schema and table config available, then we can use the Pinot admin client or directly use the REST API exposed by Pinot to create the tables. So once you create the table, then the next step is to set up the data ingestion pipeline. And then we will start with the batch ingestion data pipeline. So let's say that we have some raw data available on some storage systems like HDFS, S3, or Azure Data Lake, or NFS. And then this raw data can be in any format, can be in multiple different formats. Pinot currently supports JSON, CSV, Avro, Parquet, and ORC. And you can, if you have the raw data available in some other formats, you can still easily add the new types. You can just simply implement the record reader to support the another formats. So with this raw data, what you need to do is to generate the Pinot segments. So for this, we provide a segment generation job as a library, and we also currently provide the Hadoop wrapper. So if you have some cluster engines other than Hadoop, like Spark, then you can easily add the wrapper on this library to generate the Pinot segments. So if you provide the raw data along with the Pinot schema and table config to this job, then this will gonna generate the Pinot segments. So once you have the Pinot segments, then you have to push these segments into the Pinot. So for this, we also provide the segment push job as a library. Again, we also provide the Hadoop wrapper to push segment into Pinot. So let's zoom in a little bit on what actually happens inside of Pinot when you push the data into Pinot. So since there are multiple components are involved, I can briefly introduce you guys one by one. So we first have the segment store. This is the place where the original copy of the Pinot segments are stored. And we currently support the HDFS, S3, Azure Data Lake, and NFS. And you can easily also add another storage files to support, since this is the pluggable layer. And we also have the controllers. Controllers are responsible for admin tasks, and it also maintains the global metadata of the system. And we use Apache Helix, which is for the cluster management. And then we use the Zookeeper as a persistent data, metadata store. So basically, Helix is built on top of the Zookeeper. So Helix will Helix talks with the Zookeeper, and then Pinot talks with the Helix. And we also have the servers. Servers are hosting the segments, and they are processing queries. So the segment push job will provide the three different informations to controller. So it's going to provide the table name, segment name, and segment URI path. So segment URI path is indicating where the original segments in the segment store is located. And then based on this information, controller will compute the assignment. So it's going to assign the segments to some target servers. And this assignment is computed based on the segment assignment strategies. So Pinot currently supports uniform, replica group, and partition-aware segment assignment strategies. And uniform is the simple one. So the controllers, we're going to evenly distribute the segments across all servers. And replica group and partition aware is more advanced one where we are applying this for supporting the high QPS use cases. So after controller decides on which servers assigns the servers for a segment, then they're going to update the metadata. And this metadata is basically the mapping from segment to the target servers that are hosting this segment. And controller also notifies to servers that there are new segments to host. Then the server will gonna download the segments from the segment store, and then they're gonna start serving those segments for query. So now we have ingested some data into Pinot. So what we would like to do next is to extract the data out of Pinot. So for this, we have another component called broker, and then broker exposes the query interface to the clients. So when it gets the queries from the client, then it will forward the query to the servers, and this routing is based on the routing strategies. And we have the each routing strategies for each segment assignment strategy because the routing scheme has to understand how the segments got assigned in the beginning. And after it forwards the queries to the servers, the broker will collect the results back, and then they're gonna merge them and return the final result back to the clients. And then, so now we can also add the real-time ingestion. So for this, we need to do the one-time setup, and then we can specify the stream source information as part of the table config. So as you see in the example on the screen, we can set the new table type as a real-time, and then we can also set the replication factor, and then we can also configure the broker. So for this example, we're gonna use the assume that the data is available in the Kafka topic. So we can add the Kafka broker, and we can also add the Kafka topic name. So if you configure this real-time table, then the real-time servers will going to start consume data from the streaming source, and then they're gonna keep consume data in memory and periodically flush data to segment store. And then in case you have some overlapping data between real-time and offline servers, you still don't have to worry about it because Broker handles the offline and real-time federation. And also, it makes sure that your result is correct. So far, we have set up the Pinot table, and then we also set up the batch and real-time ingestion, and we also covered how to extract data out of Pinot. So the next step is to connect some UI tools for like the superset for the visualization. And I actually prepared you guys for a quick demo. So if you download the Pinot Apache release, then it comes with the quick start script. And this brings up all the required components that we mentioned during the talk. So it's starting the Kafka and Zookeeper. And also, it brings up the Pinot cluster. And then it's setting up the table and schema. And then it also starts the Java program that actually fetches the data from the meetup.com public API and then publish the events to a Kafka topic, which is consumed by Pinot. Let me start the superset quickly. So out of the box, Pinot provides the query console. So this shows the table schema, and then you can write some queries in this box, and then you will get the result, table view result, and also the raw data, raw result. So we can run some queries like this. So on top of this query console, we also provide the Swagger UI for the controller, Pinot controller APIs. So with this, you can manage the metadata like table config or schema or also the segment metadata. And then you can also run some admin tasks like rebalancing the table or reloading the segments when you change the schema. So this is pretty much what you get from Pinot out of the box. And then once you have the data ready, then you can do some other interesting things if you have the UI tools connected. So Superset comes with the SQL Lab, which is basically the same as the Pinot Query Console, but with a better UI. So you can run any queries like this. And then you can also create the charts, but for the time issue, I already created some example charts. So if we change this to group, change city to country, then we can basically create the charts based on the popular countries. And then I also have some dashboard generated for you. So we have the total number of the RSVP and top 10 popular events and also popular cities and RSVP counts based on the country. So even with this simple setup, you can get pretty cool visualizations and pretty cool insights out of this data. So this was my demo. And then Jackie will talk about the different performance optimizations of Pinot.
Thanks, Nihan, for the demo. So hi, everyone. I'm Jackie. So today I'm going to talk about the performance of Pinot. So I'll start with the different use cases powered by Pinot and show some like typical queries, and then followed by some benchmark chart against Druid. So we picked Druid because Druid is like system that is very similar to Pinot, and then they are targeting the same use cases as us. So the first use case is interactive dashboard. So for this example query, we can see like this query is actually querying how many page views happen in US using the browser Chrome per day, for example, if time is like this since Apple, for example. And then usually for interactive dashboard, the query is like human-driven queries, which can slice and dice on arbitrary dimensions. So actually there's no like fixed query pattern. And then for this, actually we deploy the same, we deploy a cluster with same number of nodes, like one Druid cluster and one Pinot cluster. So because like usually for interactive dashboard, the QPS is not high, it's like less than one QPS. So we didn't run like query with that. So we just run 5,000 queries back to back and then collect the latency histogram. So here we can see like Pinot finished off it 5,000 queries in 11 minutes, and then Druid finished it in 24 minutes. So that means like to running the same number of queries, actually Pinot can cut the cost. So the next one is the set phasing analytics. So for the example queries showed here, it's actually like how many people viewed a particular article and in a period of time, and then what's the characteristic of the people. For example, like what company is the people from, and then it's from which industry. So for such use cases, usually the query is well predefined and then with some different filter values. And also, it usually have a filter on the primary key. So in the query example, the primary key is the article ID. Then because it's actually a size-facing use case, so usually it requires pretty high QPS, so thousands QPS, and then usually we need to return the result in like sub-hundreds milliseconds. So for such queries, Druid performance start degrading a lot at around 100 QPS, but actually Pinot is able to do thousands QPS easily. So next one is anomaly detection use case. So the query, actually anomaly detection use case usually run on the same data set as the interactive dashboard. But then the difference is for anomaly detection, the query is usually machine generated. And because we want to figure out the anomaly, so it needs to monitor all the possible dimensions, combinations. And then, so usually like the queries is like a bulk high QPS query. So, and also another issue is because like sometimes it's run at high throughput, And then the data distribution can be really skewed. For example, like for the events happening in US, there might be like 60 or 70% of all the events. But for example, Ireland, there are less than 1% of the data. So with such like characteristics of the data, so actually, yeah, even Pinot with inverted index is not good enough to serve like 100 QPS. So that's why we implement a special index called star tree index, which I will cover later. But with that, we are able to do about 100 QPS with sub-second latency. All right, so what makes Pinot like so perform, so high performance? So I will use this simple query to explain. So in this query, so in order to solve this query, let's so first we need to store all the columns for sure. So here we have first the storage layer. So storage, we need to actually fetch the column data for page view, country, and browser to solve this query. And then after that, we have a filter phase. In the filter phase, we want to select the records that match the predicate country equals US and browser equals Chrome. And then after that, the final step is the aggregation step, where we actually aggregate the page view value and then sum them up. So for each phase, there are some techniques. So first, there are some common techniques in the industry. So most of them is on the storage layer. So there are like columnar store and also encoding compression. Then on top of that, both Pinot and Druid has an inverted index technique. And then after that, Pinot has its own technique, like the sorted index and star tree index. So I'll start bottom up. So first, for the columnar store. So think of the raw data like this. So if we store the data in a row fashion, so in order to solve this query, we need to, like in general, read all the rows. But if we store it in columnar fashion, then all we need to do is just read the relevant columns. In this query, we just need to fetch country column and the browser column. We also need to fetch page views, but like for example, there might be other actual like age column, blah blah blah. And then also, thanks to the columnar fashion, we are able to like apply a lot of like encoding and actual like compression techniques, such as dictionary encoding and like bit compression on the forward index. So now we'll go to the filter phase. So for this query, if we want to solve this, the naive way is just scanning everything, but that will be too slow. So here is where inverted index is useful. So inverted index is a like map from each individual value to a list of doc IDs that contains this value. So for example, in this use case, the inverted index for column country, because we are interested in US, so we are able to do a const time value lookup to get the document that contains US. So for example, document 0 and 3. So the same for browser. So in the example data, like we are able to fetch doc ID 0. And then bitmap, we can do a very cheap bit operation on the AND clause. So we just end up these two document ID bitmap, and then we can easily get the field dot document, which is 0. So that's the inverted index. What if we want to further extend the performance? So one solution is sorted index. If we pre-sort the data on a column, so it's like similar to the primary column concept in other database. So if we pre-sort the column, then Pinot is able to automatically detect like all the value for this column is sorted, and then we'll automatically apply the run-length encoding, which can like further compress the data. But more importantly, we will able to like with the data sorted, like the selected records will have very good spatial locality. So actually, we have observed really good performance out of this. So we can see for inverted index, the performance start degrading at 100 QPS, but sorted index, like, it can easily go over 1,000. Okay, so far we have covered the filter phase. Then let's go to the aggregation. So even if we applied all the techniques, so then the actual performance could also be like limited by the time of aggregation. So for example, like if we only filter on country US, then for example, we need to aggregate 60% of all the records, then like even though like there's no cost on the filtering, the query will still be quite slow. So here is a graph of the space and latency trade-off. So basically, without any pre-queue, then we need to scan everything. And then actually, the number of documents that need to be scanned is like unbounded. But on the right side, if we pre-queue everything, like some system does that, like Kylin. So yeah, all the aggregation becomes a one value lookup, which will be extremely fast. But the problem here is, what if we are like we want to query or filter on a large number of dimensions? Then we will face a problem of storage explosion. So here's where StarTree comes into the picture. So what is StarTree? So StarTree in general is a configurable trade-off between latency and space by partial pre-aggregation techniques or pre-queue. So what it does is, for example, on the right side, there is a limit on how many records you need to scan per query. So if you pre-queue everything, then that threshold is one. If you don't do any like pre-aggregation, then it's unbounded. So StarTree allow the user to configure a threshold as the upper bound for each for the number of documents need to be scanned for each query. Then with that, we can have a hard upper bound for the query latency. So with StarTree, StarTree is designed to solve the anomaly detection issue, and then as I have discussed, like it can further extend the performance to like actually support hundreds of QPS. And then because of the time reason, I cannot cover all the details of StarTree, but there is a LinkedIn engineer blog which discusses all the architecture and like inner like detailed implementation of the StarTree if you are interested. Okay, so I have covered a lot of like different indexing techniques in Bnode, but the next question would be, when and where should I apply all these indexes? Right, so Bnode has a very flexible segment level physical query planner. After the like normal database do the logical plan. But actually, Bnode extends that to the segment level physical plan. So it actually gets the query and then look at the segment metadata and then all the available indexes. And then based on the segment information, pick the correct index to apply and then to solve the query. So here are two examples. For example, the first query, there's no filter. And then we just need to know the max value of a column. So the query planner will figure that out and then see, okay, this query can be solved by like directly read the metadata. And then for the second query, assume we have sorted index on account ID, which is the primary key here. And then we don't have any index on country. Then this planner will like smartly reorder the predicates so that we will apply the account ID predicate first and then followed by the country ID. So the total number of documents need to be selected will be reduced a lot. So far I have covered all the inner segment optimizations. There are also some like inter-segment global optimizations available in Bnode. So one is segment pruning. So we can prune segment based on either the max min value or Bloom filter or like partitioning. And also we have our optimization on the segment assignment. So we can assign segment in a fashion so that it can reduce the fan out of servers overall. So we have observed really good performance for high throughput use cases from these optimizations. Okay, so far I have covered all the techniques in pNode, and then because of this, pNode become one of the most high-performance OLAP systems in the industry. And also, like usually for use cases like member-facing interactive dashboard anomaly detection, for use cases with such different requirements, such different like query patterns, usually like people use different system for each individual of them. But because pNode is so flexible and pNode support like so worse of indexing techniques, pNode becomes the like only one solution for all these use cases in LinkedIn. All right, thanks.
So,
question.
Yeah, so we do support schema evolution. So the question is, how is schema evolution handled in pNode? So we do support schema evolution as long as the schema is backward compatible, meaning you can add more columns, and we provide you a way to autofill the historic data for the newly added column by providing a default value of your choice. But obviously, like other systems, we don't do backward incompatible schema changes. Yes. Yeah, it's a good suggestion. We have so far not considered it, but this is something that we can definitely consider in the future. Right. So what we're saying there is that the pNode becomes a storage and execution engine for the queries itself, but the anomaly detection is a stateless algorithm that is running, and what it does is it sends a burst of queries that it needs to do to run its anomaly detection algorithm. Right. So that's what is meant by machine generated. So the algorithm is generating those pNode queries. Yes. Right. So one of the biggest example is we don't support joints, because for us, it really does not make a lot of sense for an OLAP system to do that, at least as of right now. But other than that, and also we at the moment don't support nested queries. But for the analytical purposes, we do all kinds of aggregation group by queries and all those are supported, and we are syntax compatible with SQL in there. Right. So internally at LinkedIn, we have our own LRM metrics and what we call internally as in-graphs, which is capturing all the system-level metrics as well as the application-level metrics, like latency, QPS, how the JVM is performing, memory usage, swapping, and all of that, right? And for us, the starting point is the latency and the throughput. If the latency is spiking or something, then we know that there's some of an issue. And then we use the rest of the metrics to figure out, where the pressure is. Is it CPU bound or I/O bound, or are we just swapping a lot and stuff like that? And then we decide based on that. Yes.
Security?
So, yeah, the question was how does it handle row and column level security? So right now what we have within LinkedIn is more of a table level security, like, you know, a service or a user has to have access to that particular table. At the open source land, what we have given is more of a interface where you can plug in your own security model in Pinot to whatever granularity that you like. All right. I think there are no more questions. We are available on LinkedIn also. You can, you know, just feel free to contact us, and we are here. These two folks are here for the next 2 days or the rest of the week. So reach out to them. And we'll be happy to help you out if you wanted to use Pinot in your organization. Thank you.